adjust your dial. This is not a test. We control the airwaves. This is The Last Horror Cast.
I guess, are we just calling this our Frank Henenlotter mini spotlight episode, even though we're only covering two episodes or two movies of his?
Well, what's weird is the movies are surprisingly closely connected, considering I had absolutely no idea what Brain Damage was about until, like, while I was watching it. They're both about, like, a guy running around New York City killing people being controlled by, like, some little thing they carry around with.
I'm glad you learned what Brain Damage was about while you watched it, because I saw it 2 days ago and I still don't know.
I was literally, because I went in completely blind, I just figured, oh, what the hell, I gotta watch it, there's no point in knowing what it's about. So and like full disclosure, I watched the YouTube stream of it, which is not
so did I. It's not good.
It's not that great in quality, but I'm just like, I called it up on my TV and I'm like, oh, it's not very good. Well, it's up there now. it's just actually, play and move on with life.
I actually looked for a different one, and there was one that was much better quality, and I was like, oh, sweet, I'll watch this one instead. And then they started talking, and it was all in some foreign language, and I'm like, god damn it.
Well, I had, you know, the full DVD, and yeah, everything was crystal clear, but still didn't make a damn bit of sense. But
I don't understand what was going on. I mean, plot-wise, I can't see how either of these movies confused you. I'm not saying that they make sense. I'm saying the plots are very simple. Is strangely a different thing when you're in this weird world that they've invented.
So do you guys have any experience with other Henenlotter films, like Frankenhooker or Bad Biology?
I have seen Frankenhooker. I went to a screening of it, which was like, it's fun to see these types of movies in a screen. I don't remember the experience of going, like a bunch of other horror fans that are all kind of reacting.
Yeah, I know of the VHS box of Frankenhooker, although I never actually saw one at a video store. So I didn't actually get the experience of having one talk to me, but
I have a Frank.
The VHS box talked to you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was it was a big thing. Like there were little light up lights on the nipples, and yeah, the case like talked.
You push the button, and it's like, want a date?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I was gonna say so. Oh, I got Frankenhooker on my DVR, but I don't know if I'm ever gonna watch it now.
I was gonna say, do you still have it on your DVR? I guess we shouldn't spoil things too much. Like, I don't know, maybe good things will come from this episode. Who knows?
Doesn't sound like you guys have anything positive to say. I have a feeling we're all going to say the same thing. It's just I'll be saying it with a smile. I'll be saying it with a frown.
All right, well, screw it. I say we just get into it. So covering two Frank Henenlotter films, one of which I'm sure that most of the listeners have heard of, Basket Case. The other one, Brain Damage. I don't know how well known this movie is.
Must not be too well known because I couldn't even like rent it if I wanted to. So
yeah, and I think the title like is known. Like when you said, oh, let's do Brain Damage too, like I knew what that title was, but knew absolutely nothing about the movie. But
yeah, this movie had a reputation back in the day. So if anybody has seen it, it's our listeners who have seen it. It's not, but it's not one that many people have actually seen. I think it's mourned by its reputation. And its reputation is that it's sort of crazy and insane. And I mean, apparently it's an earned reputation, I think, to that. So
yeah. Well, I'll state right now, when we get to Brain Damage, I cannot synopsize it because I don't have any idea, what happened. So one of the two of you is taking that one. As far as Basket Case, if you want me to, I will. Otherwise, I think Brian's fired up enough that listening to him synopsize might actually be pretty entertaining.
No. This was Doug's choice. He gets to synopsize Basket Case. I'm putting everything on Doug for this episode.
Well, you picked Brain Damage, just to clarify. I said, let's mix Basket Case with anything. Like I threw it that open, I would have been happy to have like a Shakespeare film be the other one.
Basket Case and Othello for this week.
So you picked the other movie, so I do not accept responsibility for that. Whatever. Although, anyways, we're gonna get into it here because I think we're gonna. But like, I don't know, as far as the plot to Basket Case goes, this guy, well, the movie opens with a kill, kind of unseen giallo-style kill where we don't know who's doing the killing. We then pick up on our main character who's walking around New York City, and it's slimy, gross 80s New York City that I miss.
Yeah, that was the exciting part for me.
Yeah. And he goes into some, like, the world's worst hotel, where I'm not even sure if it's really a hotel, because some of the people clearly live there, and some of them are renting rooms by the day, and it's weird.
The office of the hotel was actually shot in a freight elevator that they just held the door open and shot the office stuff in it, so...
Yeah, this film's pretty low budget, and that becomes pretty clear with some of the sets. They obviously didn't have much to work with. But anyways,
I mean, they have a full $35,000.
Right. Yeah, and I think it shows. that's $1,982 though.
That's true.
That's like having $40,000 today. Anyways, so whatever. He's carrying around this basket. He's going to visit doctors and stuff. Reveal becomes that in the basket is his little brother, who is his Siamese twin, who was surgically removed from him at the age of 12. Everyone thought the Siamese brother died, but it didn't. And they are still pissed off about being involuntarily separated. And so they are traveling around killing the doctors who were involved. For some reason, there's a telepathic connection between them. And Belial, which is the little monster brother, does not seem to like it when his older brother, twin brother, meets up with a girl, so he kind of keeps screwing that up. Weirdest rape scene in history happens. Ugh. Eventually, the two brothers have a long, drawn-out fight, and end up... I think it's presumed that they kill each other, although there are sequels to this, so I don't know if we should be making that assumption. I mean, does that summarize plot-wise what happened in this movie? It doesn't summarize what happens in this movie, but it summarized the story of what went on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the gist of it. And
I mean, there is like a, 20-minute flashback sequence to when they were kids. Which is
about that,
I don't know if that's my favorite part of the movie or not, but I know I really enjoyed it. Because they actually have like this, I don't know, 16-year-old actor pretending to be 12. And they have like his shirt is torn, and they have him with like the Muppet thing that's supposed to be his Siamese brother actually like stuck to him, and he's walking around with it. And I just think it was so mean to do that to an actor that makes me enjoy watching it.
Well, you know, he was getting his cut of the $35,000, so
get his 18 bucks or whatever.
He earned it. Okay, so Brian, you already said this was a first time watch for you. Doug, you've seen this before?
Yeah, this is one. So in the 80s, I watched this movie a bunch. Old, like, crappy VHS taped off TV version of it that I had as a kid. Kind of lost it for a long time. Hadn't seen it in years. Rediscovered it maybe a decade ago. And I've seen it a few times since then, just sort of whenever. And sometimes I get an urge to watch something that is just slimy and gross. And if movies can be described as Charlie Brown characters, I sometimes want to watch Pigpen. So I need to find something like this that is just... And yeah, I've seen it a lot, and I enjoy it every time. So
yeah, this
that's
is
why Brian and I are going to hate each other in a few minutes.
No hate.
This is the second time watch for me. The first time was maybe 10 years ago. I was kind of going through filling in some holes of, you know, some of the big name horror movies that I hadn't seen, and Basket Case is at least a title that is pretty well known. So knowing nothing about it at that time, I was like, oh, I'll go seek this one out too, and found a copy, put it in, watched it, and within 15 minutes, like, was checking the DVD case to make sure I got the right thing, because I wasn't sure that I actually had a legit horror movie that I was watching. But once I came to terms with the fact that it is not a serious film, and it is more comedy than anything else, I won't say that I enjoyed the experience, but at least I was able to come to terms with it. So now watching it a second time, I knew what I was getting into, and I'll say I enjoy it, you know, for what it is. It's not a horror movie that I'm gonna go rush out and buy or put on a regular rotation, but when you suggested let's watch Basket Case this week, I didn't, you know, fight it. I was I was fine with seeing it again. So that says nothing about what the movie is, just my recommendation, I suppose. So, Brian, your first time watch, what's your initial impressions of this?
I was not a fan of it. I know you like it when I get all riled up, but there's not even like, it's not even like that exciting for me. It's just, I know 100% that I was just not in the right mood to watch this movie. Maybe under different circumstances, I would enjoy it a lot more. And especially if I had watched it probably like Doug, like 100 times when I was a kid, maybe I would enjoy it. But yeah, it just did absolutely nothing for me.
Did you know that it was going to be kind of goofy and almost like...
Well, I knew it. Yeah, I mean, I knew it had to be. I knew it wasn't going to be like a serious horror movie, but I don't know.
Yeah, that was...
Like I said, I just think the mood was not right for me to sit down and watch either one of these movies.
Right.
But I will say that I did enjoy some seeing some stop motion animation. I don't see that.
Oh my God. I rewound that scene and watched it 3 times.
It's great.
I love it. Yeah, the there's that budget, you know, in full force when
yeah,
Belial breaks out of the basket and trashes the hotel room, Ray Harryhausen style. But
it's amazing. It is, I love when he picks up the chair and throws it because you're like, Jesus, how did they pull that off?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not that complicated if you know what you're doing, but
well, and there's two things that he throws. There's that, and then he pulls the drawer out of the dresser. And in both cases, it looks ridiculous, and it's very clearly then a cutaway to somebody throwing the real object, you know, against a wall.
Oh, yeah.
It's so bad, but I did legitimately rewatch that scene 3 times in a row.
I have to think, though, that this film does a good job of embracing the inherent campiness in what they're doing. Like, they know that, hey, we have $35,000, we're trying to make a movie about it. Siamese twins who got separated and they're not happy about it. Like, they know they're not coming up with a masterpiece here, so they just embrace all that cheesiness, and that's how you get all the like ridiculous cast of characters that are surrounding them, and that's why you get that great stop motion scene. Like, you're just like, yeah, why not, sure. And also Belial hides in a toilet at one point, and it's like, uh-huh. That doesn't really make any sense, because first of all, they don't show you how he can get in or out of toilets. They only show you that he can be in there and then be on top of the toilet later. But so, it's
Dooley's Belial crossover, maybe.
I don't see why not. Belial goes to college.
Oh, oh God!
You know, we'd cover it on the show if they made it.
We all said we haven't seen Basket Case 2 and 3, so.
Oh, I've seen 2.
Oh, right.
We're not going to be discussing 2.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, the movie is just fully embracing like what it is, and I think one of my favorite things about the Belial character is that, like, he just screams for no reason, like, all the time. Like, what's the one scene where he's sneaking out of the apartment to go, I think this is right before the rape scene, and he, like, climbs up to the window of the apartment, looks out, and then just starts wailing for no reason whatsoever, other than that's the only noise that he can make, and it's just like, okay.
I like conceptually that he made it around town, and I just have this visual of him flagging down a cab or something. Because yeah. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense how he, A, knew where to go, and then, B, got there without somebody going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I just imagine a cab picking him up and, like, not even really paying attention to him. He's like, hey, how's it going, man? Yeah, it's hot out there, isn't it? In the back of the cab.
It's New York in the 80s, man. They wouldn't have cared. I don't know what New York was like in the 80s.
Good. I don't care.
I don't know what New York was like in the 80s, but this is how I've always pictured it, and I think this movie might be why I've always pictured it this way, and it's how I want it to have been. This idea that you're like, you go into like this hotel, and there's just like a fat guy that only has like one cartoonish outfit of what a fat slob would wear, and then he's just always behind the counter. And he's every, like, I don't even know how that guy's fat, because every 10 minutes something happens in the hotel that causes him to, like, come running out behind the desk and run upstairs. I love it. I love that girl that lives, like, down the hall. I don't know if she's, I think she might be a hooker, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah,
it is. And then, like, eventually, like, she goes out drinking with the boys, which is funny in and of itself, because he gets the basket. Because he takes the basket to the bar.
Yeah.
But
yeah, with like a luggage padlock on it too.
I know, which seems inherently mean-spirited to lock your brother in the basket. It shows a lack of trust between the two.
It really does. So. I thought about that too. Like, why not just, you know, close it? But, you know, my wife was sitting in the room.
There at the movies, and that guy steals it, then runs in the bathroom and just kicks the lock off.
Yeah, no.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's good security. That's Samsonite right there.
That particular scene, the movie theater scene. We're jumping all over the place here, but I guess it's fine with this movie.
So did the movie.
That movie theater scene really made me think that this film had a strong influence on Tarantino.
Oh yeah.
Because we have our character who's like alone and goes to see kung fu movies, which is straight out of True Romance. But then those shots from inside the basket, looking up at the guy who has stolen the basket, look just like Tarantino's trunk shots that are famously used all the time. And I'm like, God damn, like, it's to the point where I'm thinking in 82, Tarantino was like working in that convenience store, wasn't he? He was probably like renting this movie. I'm going to go ahead and assume that this is where he got that shot idea. He's like, that would work if it was a trunk of a car too, not just a basket.
No, this was another one of those funny movies where my wife was in the room for part of it. But she she was looking, she looked up at the screen right when one of the doctors that they were trying to kill came on, and I think it might have been the vet, but at the right angles, she actually looks like a young Sigourney Weaver, and my wife was like, oh, Sigourney Weaver's in this? And I'm like, no.
No, Sigourney Weaver's an actress. You're getting her confused with the people in this movie.
She's like, are you sure that's not her? So I just pulled up IMDb and just showed her the screenshot of the entire cast of the entire movie and not a single headshot for the entire film. She's like, oh, okay, probably not her then.
Well, that's not entirely fair. There must be one headshot because Hennenlotter plays the hands of Belial in the scenes where it's just clearly a human being wearing gloves. And so he must have his own picture up on IMDb.
I mean, he's not credited then because...
Oh, come on. That seems unfair. Why would he do that to himself?
Well, the funny thing is, I read some trivia on this.
And, no, Frank Hennenlotter does not have a headshot.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
He is credited. He doesn't have one.
But I did read the trivia on it, and they said that most of the end credits, like when it comes up and starts rolling, that most of those are fake names because they had such a small crew that they thought it would look stupid if they just like labeled the same person like 10 times in a row. So they just made up like names for the end credits.
Nice.
That's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, that seems like something you would do. And I mean, by 82, it was past the, what was that law or whatever, that the whole point of end credits originally was not to give credit to the people in the, or involved in the film, but it was so that they could claim some sort of tax status. Like it was your way of proving that you were involved in the movie. So
yeah, I assume by 82 they were issuing, you know, what do you guys call them, W-2s or whatever they're called.
Yeah,
that's what they called them in the Shawshank Redemption. That's how I know what your tax forms are called.
Everything Doug knows about the U.S. is from the Shawshank Redemption.
It's all right. Everything I know about Canada I learned from Trailer Park Boys and Strange Brew. So
I think we have surprisingly accurate views of each other's countries. Anyways, so I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how much there is to say about this film as far as like specifics. It's just I absolutely love the layer of dirt and grime that exists over top of this film. That is just kind of, I don't know. Everything just feels like every person in this film is a special level of scumbag. Every fucking scene, it just seems like everything is dirtier than it ought to be. And when we get to that, is it the doctor? The one where. What the hell is the main character's name that's not Belial? Belial's brother meets Dwayne. Up with the nurse. Dwayne, yeah. When Dwayne meets up the nurse, that doctor's office, I mean, I love just how scummy that doctor's office is. They clearly used, like, the hallway of an abandoned building as an office, and they just threw paperwork everywhere. And, like, the guy is played by 1982 equivalent of Steve Buscemi. He should not be a doctor at all. And he's just so slimy with that little mustache of his and shit. And you're just like, oh my God, I love this because I just love the idea that the world is such a terrible place that people have to go to this guy to get medical help.
Well, and you know what the cast of this movie was? Is every single character in this film could have, you know, and for all I know did, just immediately get done shooting one of those class action lawsuit commercials where it's like, I was injured and my lawyer got me $1,000. Like, every single one of these characters in this movie, like, put a neck brace on them and it's like, oh, yep, I see it.
Oh, that doctor is probably the best example of that.
Yep.
I now really, really want to see one of those commercials with Belial in it. It's just, he's just screaming into the camera. There's subtitles.
He just has a little neck brace.
But he still has the neck brace on.
I was involuntarily separated from my Siamese twin. Johnson & Johnson got me $2 million.
Oh, this needs to exist. Brian, you're good at making movies and shorts and stuff. Do this for your next project.
I wouldn't say good, but...
It's fine. I think you're good enough to pull that off. Anybody with a Belial doll is good enough to pull that off.
Speaking of which, did you buy yours yet, Doug?
I haven't been able to find one.
See, I think I'm going to put that on my my next movie, like on the poster. Not good, but good enough.
Yeah, you're right. Everybody here is just a scumbag. The whole scene is...
Even the characters that are trying to be nice, it's like, you're not. No. The nurse character, she's just throwing herself at some guy who wanders into her work carrying a fucking basket, refuses to tell her what's in the basket, but won't talk to her too close to the basket in case whatever's in the basket hears.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be dating anybody that's going to that doctor's office. Like, I know. I mean, what do you need to get checked out for?
Well, to be fair, originally she thought he was just there to fix the typewriter.
Oh, that's right.
The thing is, too, that's the other thing with this movie is, like, everything is just, like, such low class that it's like, this typewriter is clearly beyond repair, the way she describes it. But no, we're getting that thing fixed. We can't afford a new typewriter. We don't make that kind of money in this medical office.
See, that's another reason I don't trust her. She's either dating and going after a guy who's, like, going to see this doctor, or she's willing to just, you know, give it up to a typewriter repair man without even knowing anything about him. Like, that's either way.
Well, you got to remember, 1982, computers weren't big yet. Typewriter repair man was a well-sought-after position.
It's the next thing to IT tech.
Yeah, the government hadn't created AIDS yet to wipe out the gay people, so... Just do whatever you wanted.
Jesus.
That's for all my government conspiracy theorist fans out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can talk about the flashback a little bit, because you're right. That is...
It's an extensive flashback scene, and it is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, we see them, like, when they're...
Nobody immediately wanted to agree with me on that.
Well, it's weird, because it goes... It's a scene of... when they were born and how the dad's all pissed off because, you know, mother died in childbirth and now he's got this thing. He's like, I didn't want to have to come up with two names. Like, I think one of his big complaints. Like,
well, I mean, he's...
But how is he killed? That's the most interesting part of the flashback.
Yeah, well, then it moves forward to them at age 12, the separation, them even later when...
We should mention the separation that takes place in the family dining room. When the aunt who cares for them has gone away for the weekend.
Yeah.
So two doctors and a vet come over and perform surgery with the assistance of the dad. No mention what the dad does for a living, but I'm pretty sure he's not a medical professional. right on the dining room table. And they don't even put Dwayne all the way to sleep for it. They just kind of like get him drowsy. Not to mention, there are lines of dialogue. Like, it's like they just wanted to be serious enough that, like, a semi-retarded person would think this made sense. It's like, oh, don't worry, they don't share any organs or bone marrow, so therefore it'll be fine. But it's like, think for just a second, Belial is not physically formed enough to not be relying on somebody else's organs. Like, there's clearly no digestive system in Belial. Like, even if they are feeding that second head something, where does that come out the other end? There's no other end for it to come out. First 12 years of his life, he's shitting directly into his brother's side. It doesn't make any sense.
Oh,
I'm not
God.
Sure they meant for me to think about it that hard.
Good Lord. I had another point.
So this is better than the movie.
Right? Oh, yeah. I was going to ask, like, do you guys think there was a reason for the fact that like half of the lines of this movie were very clearly, or I don't know, seemed to be dubbed?
I think that's because of poor filmmaking.
Okay, because it's
I don't think it's like a technique. I think it's we filmed on a shitty camera that couldn't pick up half the sounds.
I didn't know if it was like actually like we couldn't get it all right, or if it was something that they tried to put in just to make it even crappier. But yeah, it's like half this movie, it's like, am I watching like an Italian film that's been like redubbed? Because it's so egregious and bad. And it's during that surgery scene is the worst of it, because they've even added in like all of these extra sound effects of the scalpel cutting and the like flesh ripping. And it's, it would make a pretty good soundtrack like for, you know, your next Halloween party. But over the top of this movie, it's like they're just trying to go so over the top excessive with it, and it's just like none of it fits. It just makes this into like a, I don't know, like a Three's Company routine, but with blood. Like,
I don't know if this helps or not, but the DVD says right on it, features a brand new film to tape digital transfer. That doesn't even mean anything to me, because the technology is so old that it doesn't even process in my brain what that means. And I think that's what we're dealing with here, is like indie films from the early 80s. I'm surprised it's not somebody holding up a ghetto blaster and hitting play and record at the same time to grab the noise effects. Like, it's I think that's like the only issue here. So.
Yeah.
By the way, ghetto blaster is a former for our younger listeners, that's what people used to listen to music on back when we had to put cassette tapes into things and actually hit a button to make things happen, and not to just like talk to our iPhone and tell it what song we want to hear. So,
what are these cassette tapes you're talking about? Yes.
No point in getting into it. There is an awesome moment in this movie where Dwayne wants to go out on his date with the girl, and he goes out and just buys a TV off the street and plugs it in and thinks that's how you watch TV. And it made me laugh, like, because he puts the TV in front of the basket, he just like pulls the rabbit ears out the back and turns it on, and it's like, just watch this. And it's like, oh my god, that's right, that's how it worked in the 80s.
Yeah.
you just like extended those metal things and moved them and hoped you picked up a signal.
By the way, every time you say Dwayne, I keep waiting for you to follow up with The Rock Johnson.
Oh, it's, my god, for the remake.
It's really
thrilling. Oh my god. I would love that remake. Dwayne The Rock Johnson playing this character. It's like reset it on the West Coast so he fits in a little better. He's strolling around. He's trying to play like this loser character, but he's 400 pounds of solid muscle.
That is the Siamese twin has to be like super buff too, and it has like,
I don't know if they would have to be or not. Yeah, he would definitely, the Siamese twin would have to have an eyebrow. Belial with a little eyebrow, amazing. Yeah. Except they'd CGI it.
Yeah, probably.
All right, well, Doug, you seem to be having a hell of a good time here, so
I love this movie. I will admit that there's an element of nostalgia to this and everything, but every time I put this movie in, it's just a smile on my face from start to end. I love the slimy, gross version of New York City that this takes place in. I love the puppet. I love the fucking stop-motion animation. I love the bad acting. I love how every character just seems to be a slightly bigger scumbag than the person next to them at all times throughout the entire film. Like, there's no good guy in this movie. Did you notice that?
It's like rock, paper, scissors of scumbags.
Yeah, it is like who is the guy in this film that you would feel bad if they got killed? Is there one?
Well, I mean, the nurse isn't all that bad.
Yeah, she's the closest.
I guess.
Doug defeated by that answer.
But I mean, I reiterate my point that she's like this guy comes into her doctor's office with unknown medical problems, and she's just like, yeah, I could take advantage of this situation. Like, this is the best character in the movie. This is the good person that you guys could point to. She's like, I can take advantage of this guy's medical problems, even though 30 seconds ago I thought he was here to fix a machine. And then she's like throwing herself at him. She's clearly desperate for male attention, because she ends up like, she follows him back to his like crappy hotel. Doesn't bother her at all that he's staying at this hotel, by the way. This hotel that like you would not want to stay in. She's fine with that. She comes looking for him later in the movie, and it's like, you've known this guy for 2 days, and when you found out somebody you know died, that's who you go to for emotional support? What is wrong with this person? Why doesn't she have other friends and family around? If she was really a good person, she'd be closer to somebody.
Well, so. And he like, you know, emotionally beat her down when they got there the first time, and you know, like, because that's when they showed up, and was that when some of the tenants had started hearing noises inside of his room?
He loses it on her, like, yeah, it's her fault that Belial's trashing the hotel.
Yeah, and he's just like, go away, you can't be here, you can't be here. And I mean, he's worried that Belial's gonna hurt her. But yeah, he's just like going off on her, like, you know, yeah, get out, get out, get out. And like, she still comes back.
Yeah, she's a damaged character at best. But I don't know, I think there's something in her past that made her have no one around her. It's a big city. She should have met somebody local by now. She doesn't have to wait for an out-of-towner to stroll by.
Look, waiting for that man with the basket.
I've decided to be really judgmental of that character, so I don't have to admit I'm wrong in case anyone else. Just gonna take it out on this poor girl.
All right, so that's Doug's opinion. Brian, final thoughts overall. Do you ever see a situation in which you'd rewatch this and enjoy it?
Somebody really wanted to drink while we watched it, maybe.
That might be fun. I don't think I've ever watched this movie intoxicated. I think that'd be enjoyable.
Could you see it as like a, you know, double feature, invite some friends over, put on Basket Case, knowing that you're just going to rip into it or have fun with it?
The double feature would not be my choice. I would show up to somebody else's house if they wanted to do this, and I'd be like, "Yeah, sure, fine, whatever." But
you live in a world where you have multiple friends who would force you to watch this movie against your will. It's happened once, and you're like, "It'll probably happen again."
I'm just saying, I would never lower myself to watch it again. But.
Interesting. I'm gonna fall in the middle and say that it's not the kind of movie that I am gonna jump up and down like Doug and sing its praises, but I think if you are in the right mindset and know what you're getting into, like, you can have a lot of fun with it. But
I
so
drunk.
I think you can enjoy it sober, but like, you just can't make the mistake that I made the first time I watched it, which is expecting that it's anything other than kind of what we just described. So you've been warned now that you've listened to this, and if it still seems appealing, yeah, then you might actually enjoy yourself. But otherwise, like, I just can't see this working for many people.
I think the biggest compliment this film gets is actually like Bloody Disgusting in their review, and like, this shows up. This is the kind of thing they use when they're promoting the film. It's just, the quote is just, it's exactly the kind of movie it sets out to be. It does not apologize at all for being what it is. It's not going to be for everybody, let's be honest. A lot of people don't have any interest in watching a movie like this, but I think people who are interested will enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said. So, okay. Well, that was the more coherent discussion, I think, of the night. So buckle up for part two here.
The next movie is a bit crazy, and for some reason has like a really long extended cameo of the two main characters from this film.
Yeah, so I've already forgotten. Which one of you is going to synopsize this?
I'm assuming me, since Doug did the other one. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's the synopsis right there.
Yeah. So these two old people apparently are keeping this weird worm slug thing alive, but it escapes, attaches itself to this guy who lives upstairs named Brian. It apparently like attaches to the back of your head and pumps your brain full of this weird drug sort of stuff.
Blue Kool-Aid.
Yeah. So he sort of, whoever it's attached to then sort of becomes, enjoys it because, you know, you're kind of getting this euphoric high off of being a symbiotic thing with it. So the movie's just sort of him going around town with this weird thing stuck to him that needs to eat brains to stay alive.
You forgot to mention one very important thing, though.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it was very important. What?
The fact that this thing is not just a parasite. We're not watching Slither or something like that. Like, this is a talking, singing parasite, sure, puppet.
This is the equivalent of the Looney Tunes cartoon with the guy that has the frog.
Yes.
When nobody's around, it like,
that's perfect. It's sort of like a combination of that with like Little Shop of Horrors, where the plant is wanting to be fed people.
Yeah.
It's kind of, sure, a combination of that if the plant was played by the frog.
Yeah,
but it looks like the little gross worm things from Dreamcatcher.
Yes. I thought you said Dreamscape for a second. I was like, what? But yeah, you're right. So most of the movie is him just walking around with this weird thing attached to him, and it's sort of, I guess, detaching itself and killing people. There's a very odd scene of him almost getting a blowjob, and then the thing pops out of his crotch, and he basically forces her to give a blowjob to this weird worm thing.
Yeah, in a very phallic, I mean, scene. Like,
what's phallic about a long thin thing that sticks out from the zipper of your pants and shoves into a girl's mouth? What's phallic about that? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those scenes where I'm like, oh, here's the one the wife's going to walk in on in this movie. I know it.
Like, alien dick? What? So, yeah. I don't know. He's becoming, like, sort of distance from his brother and girlfriend, and they start questioning it, but of course he's got a weird worm thing to feed, so it turns out that he starts seeking out victims to have this thing attack and eat its brain. And then honestly, after the blowjob thing, I kind of stopped paying attention and looked at my phone more, but I know it sort of wraps up with the old couple coming back and being like, no, you don't know how to handle this, you should give it back, but them saying no, and then shit ensues. Is that good?
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good plot description, believe it or not. Like, there isn't, like, there's a long in the middle here where we're dealing with the, and I'm using air quotes here, like, emotional turmoil while our main character tries to decide whether he wants to continue to feed this thing in order to continue to get the high from the whatever that weird lights are that it shoots into his head. Or yeah, whether he wants to try to not do that. But
yeah, because the parasite basically tells him, like, I'm not going to give you your fix unless you go get me some brains to eat. So it's...
Yeah. It is kind of a an analogy for, you know, drug addiction and sort of when you're forced to commit crimes to feed that addiction. And it's playing on that idea, again, with one of the worms from Dreamcatcher talking like the singing frog from Bugs Bunny. So...
yeah.
So
what do you think of it, Scott?
I'm going to be perfectly honest. I'm not actually sure whether I watched this movie or not, because I know that I watched Basket Case, and then I know that I got up to switch the DVD.
Scott fell asleep.
And then, no, I didn't fall asleep.
Fell asleep.
I think I must have, like, hit my head and had just, like, an hour and a half long concussion or, like, acid trip or something, because...
Oh no, that means you watched the movie. It sounds like you watched the movie from what you're describing.
After hearing your plot description, yeah, I'm thinking, like, okay, I did actually see this. But, like, it's this weird thing where it was 2 days ago, but I don't remember 90% of the details. Like, there are things that you just described in your synopsis. It's like, huh, I completely forgot that happened. So, whatever it is about this movie, like, even my brain on a subconscious level decided, like, yep, this isn't for me. I'm not even going to bother retaining it. So 48 hours later, it's gone.
Yeah, I finished watching it right before the show, and I skipped most of it in my brain. So
I mean, this might be surprising. I'm actually going to come out somewhat positive on this movie. Okay. I know, like, that's not maybe the reaction you were expecting, but I actually think...
From you, I, like, was expecting again, it, actually.
Again, that, I think this that, movie
that's
is...
Not a, that's not a put-down. That's a compliment, so don't...
No, but whatever. I don't care. Other people's opinions don't matter. No, but I think this film is doing what it does. And again, I mean, similar to Basket Case, what it does is not going to be for everybody. But it knows it's a cheesy, campy movie, and it embraces that. Similar to Basket Case, where it played up the camp, and then it also had that, like, sort of level of sleaze to it, this movie sort of flips the two, where it's way more camp and way less sleaze. But I mean, when that little worm thing started talking, I couldn't stop laughing when it happened, and I'm pretty sure that's the reaction they were going for. So I guess the movie was successful. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, see, this put a very early impression on me when I put the DVD in and the opening credits, or not opening credits, but the, like, menu selection screen on the DVD, the background is the worm in the sink when he's singing that song. Like, and it's
oh yeah, there's a musical number. I forgot about that.
And I'm just sitting there looking at that, and keep in mind, I know nothing about this film whatsoever, except that it's the same director as Basket Case. So I put this in, and I just see this like blue penis singing in a sink, and it's like some kind of weird like show tune, and I'm like, what in the fuck am I watching?
Oh, the thing is, too, like, I was totally thinking about the frog from the Bugs Bunny cartoons. So I had that song in my head already, that hello, my baby, hello, my baby. And then when the little worm thing starts singing, I'm like, okay. So they know, right? They know that I'm waiting for that thing to sing, and they just can't get the rights to that song, so they have it sing.
So they do this one instead.
But, you know, like, again, this film is embracing exactly, it loves how campy and cheesy and ridiculous it is. And that makes me kind of go, yeah, I can get behind it. It's not going to be something I watch every day. But I have a feeling if I discovered this when I was a kid that I would probably have similar feelings as towards Basket Case.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to come down 100% negative on it either, because I think there were some cool things to it. The effects of the little worm thing I thought were actually pretty neat. Like, every time it gets ready to inject that blue Kool-Aid into his brain, like, he opens up his mouth and his jaw like unhinges, and you just see this like array of all these teeth and probes and stuff in his mouth. It's like,
yeah,
all right, that's a pretty cool effect. Now, they use that exact same shot like four different times, but so you get used to it by the end. But it's, I think that effect is neat. I'm sure that if I were more interested in watching this movie, then I could probably dig a lot deeper into it in terms of some messages, because obviously the, you know, drug references and drug culture commentary, and I mean, that's super thick, but there's more to this than just a parasite who wants to eat brains.
Are you sure?
Well, I mean, no, I guess I'm not.
It's nice that you committed.
But it's just like there are some things here, but it's just, it's wadded up in this giant mess of just like, I don't know what the hell I'm watching, and to where I couldn't make sense of any of it. Now, give me another go at it, and like, maybe if I ever watch this again, I could come out, you know, with more coherent thoughts. But it's like, this just bum rushed me in such a way that I just, like I said, I can't even remember half of the movie. So. And that being said, there probably won't be another viewing for me, so we're never going to get that discussion. But
I think you touched on something that's interesting about this, which is different from what I mean, the part of the movie that caught me off guard was how good the effects are. And that means the appearance of the little thing, regardless of whether you agree with their decisions to make like a little stop motion worm that sings and dances. It does look good. There is, you just sent the gift to us that I wish we could be showing the listeners right now, of him like pulling that gross thing out of his ear. That looked really cool. Even the scarring on the back of neck when we first find out that the thing's been kind of injecting itself into his neck, we get those shots of the back of his neck. I thought the makeup effect was really cool. So the film did a good job with the way it looked. It's just a question of, I mean, again, if you're not interested in watching a worm sing and dance, then you're probably not going to enjoy this movie.
Yeah, and it is the kind of thing, too, where, you know, the plot can be summed up in a few sentences, and once you've said that and explained that, like, okay, now take that plot we just gave you, have a musical number, like, what else is there? Like, there's nothing else to this movie. Like, it's very empty. There is a
really dark ending to it that kind of got left out with the plot discussion. But...
All right, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I guess spoiler alerts for Brain Damage from 1988, but the movie does end with our main character taking the worm on in order to get his high, and then shooting himself in the head to try and kill the worm thing so that it doesn't infect anyone else or cause him to go kill anyone else, which is pretty dark and kind of neat. And again, if you're playing up into the drug message, the idea that your drug addict at the end of the movie kills himself so that he won't do any more harm to society is a pretty dark way to go.
But he doesn't kill himself.
Well, he tries. does he not kill himself? I didn't really understand the final shot of the movie, to be honest. It's just a guy with a hole in his head. And it, again, cool effect. Don't know what the hell was going on, so I went with he killed himself. He shot himself in the face. Let's go with that counts as killing yourself too.
I just noticed that there's somebody in the credits credited as toilet victim. I don't remember that scene, but that's a hell of a credit to have.
If I'm ever in a film, I hope I'm credited as toilet victim. That's all I know.
I think you mentioned it briefly, Scott, but the whole reason we picked this is because I had heard the main characters from Basket Case did a little cameo in this movie.
Yes.
And it makes absolutely no sense.
No.
It's like Brian and his girlfriend are arguing on a subway, and the main character comes in with his basket, sits directly across from him. Him and Brian stare at each other while his girlfriend mouths off about something. And then he just gets up and leaves.
Well, I think you're understating it, though, because he's there for a while, and we get several shots of him, like, which,
yeah.
Again, you're not wrong when you say it makes no sense, and I generally don't have a problem with, like, okay, well, if we want to make a movie where you have a little cameo from your other characters, so what, right?
Yeah.
But it is weird how long they hover on him, and then they do the close up of the basket, like, just in case you guys don't, this is the guy from the other movie. He still got the basket. And again, they're like, I don't think either of the movies is meant to be a period piece. They're both set in the years they take place. So I don't know why the guy would still be walking around New York with his basket.
Yeah, six years later.
Well, they made Basket Case 2, like, not too long after, so.
Basket Case 2, I don't think has Dwayne in it, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or Belial, actually, now that I think about it. I think it's a bunch of other things. It's not a good movie.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak for that. You are our Basket Case expert tonight.
Because I've seen 2 once.
Yes.
I actually own 2. I stumbled across a used copy of it somewhere, like, cheap. So I'm like, oh, I've got to see that. And I watched it once when I bought it, and I was like, I'll just put this on the shelf.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it can't have too much going for it, considering, once again, I turn to my IMDb top 5 plot keywords. One of the top 5 keywords is second in trilogy, and another of the top 5 keywords is part of trilogy. So 40% of what this thing had going for it is just the fact that it's in a trilogy.
It's not in a trilogy.
I mean, a
trilogy is when somebody makes a series of 3 films with the intention of telling one long story, or 3, like, directly interconnected stories.
You haven't seen part 3. You don't know if it's some mind-blowing wrap-up.
Well, actually, it doesn't sound like you've seen part 2, because Dwayne and his brother are, in fact, the main characters.
Are they in it? Oh, fuck.
The description of Basket Case 2 says, Dwayne and his basket-bound mutant brother are taken in by a secret home for wayward freaks with journalists hot on their trail.
See, I remember the home for wayward freaks. I don't remember Dwayne and Belial going to it. Okay. There's a lot of wayward freaks in there.
And then Basket Case 3... Dwayne recovers from his delusional breakdown to find his freakish basketball brother Belial will soon become a father. But not
Fantastic.
Everything. But not
Fuck,
everything.
Now I gotta watch 3.
But not everything is as joyous as the once tight knit brothers no longer seem to trust each other.
They didn't trust each other in the first one.
Well, he did put the basket down on the other side of the room, and so he could hit on the nurse from the distance. I mean, you can't do that, especially, which doesn't even make sense because they're telepathically connected, so I don't
right.
know what the thing on the other side of the room does. But anyways, we're not even supposed to be talking about that movie anymore.
I just like the fact that, like, their names were Dwayne and Belial. Like, who did that?
Yeah, like, who came up with that name?
Right.
It's not, despite the lengthy flashback, it doesn't get discussed. So.
Yeah.
I assume it would be that aunt that took care of them.
Yeah, she kind of took a passion for that. She had no problem with,
Remember in the flashback sequence when the, like, the county or whatever sent, like, somebody over to make sure that the child was getting a good enough education? And you get that fantastic scene of their, like, lecturing the aunt, like, we recognize that you are authorized to be a teacher, but we have to check up and make sure the student is getting the equivalent education they would if they were attending a regular school. And the aunt keeps correcting her, and, like, students, there's 2 of them, like, and then you just see the girl open the door and see the 2 brothers still physically connected, and she freaks out. I love that moment. That served no purpose for the rest of the movie. Anyways. I was in Basket Case, not Brain Dead, Brain Damage, which we're supposed to be discussing.
Yeah, I think we're done talking about Brain Damage.
Brian was not happy with this week's selections.
No. I just was not in the right mood for these movies.
That makes sense. I mean, it requires, like I said, a very, very specific mindset. And at least this time around, I did have that mindset for Basket Case, but I still wasn't prepared for Brain Damage.
I'm watching the GIF that you forwarded of where he's just constantly pulling whatever that stringy thing is out of his ear, and it's all covered in blood and stuff. And that's how I'm picturing Brian trying to watch the movie at home. Like, just make it over already.
Get it out.
It's like, what the fuck?
So thumbs up all around, I think what we're saying.
I think that's what I heard, yeah. All right. Do we want to bother taking a break or just go right into the one movie we have to talk about?
Yeah, we can just move on if you want. I don't. We're going to be done early tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
I might have time to watch Basket Case 2 before bed. now that you're reminding me that I don't know the plot to it anymore, I'm like, God damn it.
Well, I would say
your homework. I can't believe journalists are chasing them. This is so 1980s.
Your homework, then, is to watch Basket Case 2 and 3 and report back to us.
I'll see what I can do.
I'm sure you could buy the trilogy at Walmart for $4.
Well, I already have 1 and 2, though, so...
Gotta find 3. See if that's on YouTube. I'm sure it is.
All right, Brian, so you're the only one that did any extra credit this week. Doug and I watched absolutely nothing.
Weren't you supposed to watch Monster, like, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, but then I watched Westworld instead.
All right.
Well, yeah, but you watched Westworld before the end of last week's show, so you could have watched Monster this week, and you chose not to.
That's true. That is technically how that happened. I guess I should go down and make sure that my DVD player still works after putting Brain Damage in it. I'm not...
Fuck it! It's like a little self-destruct button on the back.
It's like, I'm out.
So Basket Case 3 is on YouTube, and I'm just like scrolling through it. What the fuck?
All right, I'm sold. I'll watch it.
This is a good link.
All right, Brian, so what did you watch this week?
I went and checked Get Out, the first horror movie from Jordan Peele, from Key and Peele.
That's a weird thing to say right there.
Why?
I don't know. Why is... Doesn't feel like the guy from Key and Peele should be making a horror film.
Oh, he loves horror movies. He was excited.
I've been hearing good things about this.
I absolutely loved it. I felt awkward while watching it, but trying to think of how to say this without coming off as an asshole, but fuck it. Went and saw the movie. We went and saw the movie, and so lots of people come in, and I'm just like, oh man, I hope like nobody talks during the movie, and people talk during the movie. And I was kind of like, it's a bummer. But I'm just like, you know what? There's nothing I can do. So maybe I'm going to listen, see what people react to that maybe I don't get because I'm just a stupid middle-class white guy. So what the fuck do I know? So I tried to turn it into like a social experiment to see what other people were getting out of it that maybe I wouldn't get out of it, considering what the topic of the movie is, which is this black guy who's dating this white girl goes to meet her parents for the weekend. And he's really nervous about it. And of course, they're like super upper crust, like rich white people. And then it turns out the neighborhood they live in, there's something very weird going on. And has to do with, just weird shit's going on. And so I was trying to like just see what people were reacting to. And there wasn't like a whole lot of difference, but stuff, just some of the like the little social cues that like, like he shows up and, Bradley Whitford from The West Wing and Cabin in the Woods and a billion other things, Billy Madison, plays the dad, and he comes off as completely as like, I'm a stupid rich white guy, so I don't really know what I'm saying type of guy. So of course when he shows up and he's like, hey, how's it going, my man? And it's just like, oh, don't do that. And then it's funny because they point all that shit out and make it hilarious because she's like, well, I'm gonna warn you that he's going to tell you that he would have voted for Obama for a third term. And at some point, someone's going to bring up how much they love Tiger Woods. So just kind of go with it, you know.
Awesome.
And so it's sort of just playing off like these weird, awkward social cues of, you know, crusty white people trying to be like, hey, look at me. I'm not racist. I love Tiger Woods, right? And, you know, that just coming off more racist because you said it that way.
Right.
So it's just full of that. But then like shit gets crazy. But I don't like, I don't want to go into it because I think it's better if you just kind of go in and experience it. But yeah, it's a very crazy, fucked up horror movie that deals a lot with race and will make you feel bad for, I don't want to say make you feel bad for being white, just make you feel bad because, you know, like, oh shit, like if some of this stuff was like real, you know, somebody would try to do it because people are idiotic and stupid. So I don't know. I absolutely loved it. I think I'm going to go see it again this weekend with some friends who want to go see it. So I recommend for me.
All right. Yeah. I've been hearing, I've heard multiple people talk about it. I heard from some source, I can't remember where it was now, that they didn't even consider it a horror movie. So to hear you reemphasize that it is, like, that's reassuring. But
yeah, it's interesting to see. Cause I mean, Jordan Peele has been pretty like entrenched in pop culture for like the last, you know, 6-7 years. So it's interesting to see him do a take on like, well, this is why black people are way afraid of white people, and just do that as a horror movie. And you can be like, oh yeah, I totally get it. Like, I don't know. It's just really refreshing to see a really good horror movie. And I saw some article that's like, why are people acting like deep horror movies are a new thing? I don't think it's a new thing. I think it's just, it's been a long time since we've seen a really good, like, thought-provoking, like, horror film.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very glad to see that sort of making a comeback.
Yeah, that's good. It's, I feel like, and I've always felt that, you know, horror definitely goes in waves. And, you know, it's kind of through the decades, you'll get areas, you know, or eras where, you know, horror's on a big swell, and then other times it kind of dies off, and, you know, we rarely get anything. And I feel like right now we're kind of in one of those ruts where there's not a whole lot coming out in the theaters. What we have gotten isn't spectacular. You know, there's a couple good ones here and there, but, you know, a few years ago you could look in the paper every week and see some new horror movie coming out. And I know that it's, you know, February, March, so it's early in the year for a lot of the movies. But yeah, I just feel like we haven't been getting a whole lot of good ones, and even when we do, it's kind of formulaic or run-of-the-mill. You know, like I talked about Rings just a couple weeks ago, and it's just like, okay, yes, it's a horror movie in a theater, but do we really care? Like, so to get anything that actually makes you think a little bit, or that's unique and original, like, that's always refreshing, and I love seeing that.
Yeah, it's like me and Wes went and saw it. And like I said before, I was wary about sort of the crowd reaction, but I think I actually like played into it a lot and made me enjoy it a lot more. So I mean, there's scenes where everybody starts bursting out like clapping in the middle of the movie for certain reasons. And like, it's just, it was like really infectious. Like, oh my God, like this is so great. So yeah. So I loved it. I, you know, was sitting in the middle of the theater, just like, you know, I hope I can learn something as a crazy white guy or whatever. I don't know. I'm not even making any sense, but I don't know. I loved it. Definitely go see it. It's worth a watch.
Can I ask a question that might be completely unfair to ask?
Sure.
You're talking a lot about race relations and about audience reaction and stuff. Yeah. Do you think this film is going to play for those of us who aren't so American and maybe don't live in a world where this, you know, black versus white literal tension exists on a daily basis?
Oh yeah, I think it'll still play.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not trying to.
No.
Trying to find a way to say it where I'm like, is it something that's aimed at a very specific audience that deals with this stuff every day, or is it
going
to play for those of us who?
It'll still play because, like I said, it's a good horror movie, but they sort of play up sort of these stereotype sort of things. And sort of kind of make fun of him, which is good. Like I said, all the stuff with him showing up and the dad just being like, hey, my man. And then at some point.
I love that concept. Yeah.
And it's Bradley Whitford. So, I mean, he does.
I can hear it out of his mouth. Like,
yeah. It's just like, oh, you don't know you're coming off as a complete idiot, but whatever. And just the awkwardness of watching this guy sort of have to go through the motions with this family. And I can almost see him ticking off a checklist, like in his head, like, oh, there's the Obama thing, there's Tiger Woods, like just all this stuff where he's just like, yeah, I've dealt with this shit before. I'm fucking tired of dealing with this bullshit. So, yeah.
Alrighty. Yeah. I don't know how many free weekends I have coming up, but I think I need to make it out to see this. That's been a lot of recommends for me now. And I've yet to hear anything like negative or even neutral. Like everybody's been positive on this.
I would make it a priority to go see it. I think it's really good. I think you really enjoy it. And I saw today, up until today, it had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes until some critic had to be a D-bag and not like it, apparently.
Hmm. All righty. Well, Doug, you going to try to see that too? Interest you enough?
I'm going to go with probably not. I don't have time, and Logan comes out this week, so.
Yeah.
If I make it to the theater, it'll be for that. So maybe when it hits home release or whatever, I'll check it out. That's not critical of the film. It's critical of my lifestyle choices that don't leave me with enough time to see two movies in the same week.
No, trust me. I'm without children, so I'm probably going to go see Logan tomorrow and then go see Get Out again on Saturday. So.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I used to do.
All right, so are we just calling this like the shortest episode that we've done yet?
I think so.
77 episodes, and we barely cut an hour here. So,
wow.
Doug, I think when you and I first started, we were pretty short. We might have had a couple that were down there around the hour mark. I don't remember exactly how it started out.
Yeah, they were shorter, but I think this is kind of bad how short we've gone on this one. Well, I should have lied and said I saw some movie and just talked about it for a while.
Well, for next week, you know, that we're going to have me and Doug talking about Logan, so there's that to look for.
Oh, I hope so.
Aw.
So are we kicking off next month as Bill Paxton Appreciation Month?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the plan, is for the next four episodes to be in memoriam of really, really sad that I'm getting upset saying that, you know, we're saying goodbye to Bill Paxton. It's one of those things where I didn't really think that I was that big of a Bill Paxton fan until I found out that he passed away, and it's just like, oh, shit. Like,
he's just one of those actors that you'd see something with Bill Paxton in it. Even if you were interested in the movie, you're like, oh, Bill Paxton's in it? And then you would consider maybe watching it just because Bill Paxton was in it.
Well, yeah. And the thing with him is, like, people go, well, what is it about the guy that you like? And it's like, you know, I can't tell you what it is, because if I go through and I think about like my favorite Bill Paxton performances, they're all quite different. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's Aliens or whether it's Near Dark. Near Dark is like one of my favorite performances of all time. Forget Bill Paxton performances, just any performance. And you know, compare that to something like Nightcrawler that he did recently, and you're just like, holy shit! Like he's good in all these different roles, and it's like he's one of those guys that probably is less famous than he deserves to be because he's too good of an actor and he is too different in all the different movies, so people don't think of him in the way that like they don't think of him as a movie star because he's too good of an actor to be that. So
he's a great bad guy, he's a great good guy, he's just like just great like in everything. And so I was off Facebook, I was playing video games all day on Sunday because I had nothing to do, so I was like, I'm just gonna fucking sit here and play video games. And I wasn't on Facebook, and I got on Facebook that night, and I saw all these, like, rest in peace Bill Paxton. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck just happened? So then I was bummed for the rest of the week, really.
It's kind of it's weird, because like, with all the celebrity deaths that have happened recently, it's like, I genuinely thought that I was kind of too old to be affected by the, you know, hearing about some Hollywood star passing away. But every now and again, there's one that comes along like this, where I'm like, he was one of ours, right? Like, it's weird that way.
Yeah, and the fact that he died during surgery too.
Yeah, that part sucks.
Yeah. It's always just something that's like, oh, like that wasn't supposed to be that big of a deal, and then
it
turns out to be the biggest deal of all, I guess. But yeah. So yeah, I suggested doing a Bill Paxton memorial episode, and Doug's like, fuck that, we're gonna do a whole month.
So well, because we were trying to decide which two movies to narrow it down to, and we couldn't agree.
Yeah.
By which, when I say we couldn't agree, I mean I couldn't agree with myself which two I wanted to pick. So I'm like, there's no point in me. Like, I can't recommend that these guys pick two out of these four that I've narrowed down to, or five or two.
You were just like, we're doing a month. And there was not like,
there was no hesitation. Sounds good. So I think the format of what we're going to do is each week we do one Bill Paxton movie and then another movie that thematically ties to it but is not necessarily a Bill Paxton film. Oh, I don't know if any of them actually will be, but
I think that's the idea. Yes. Yeah.
So you'll get four Bill Paxton movies over the next 4 weeks, and then four other movies to piggyback with them. And if I remember right from the discussions, our first week is going to be Western vampire movies. So Near Dark with Bill Paxton and John Carpenter's Vampires.
Correct.
Okay. Sounds right to me. So,
not the sequel to John Carpenter's Vampires, the one that starred Bon Jovi.
Not.
We can do that one if you want.
No. I said to bring up that Bon Jovi was in the sequel to a John Carpenter.
Yeah.
It's like Los Vampiros or something too. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, James Wood.
No. So I'm excited. I'm excited because Scott's never seen Near Dark before, so this could be an interesting first watch for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the combination of Bill Paxton and Lance Henriksen is one of the best on-screen duos you'll ever see in cinema history. I think it is fantastic. I think it's interesting to me that Kathryn Bigelow has become a big name director now, years after making this movie, whereas I think her directorial talents are strong in this movie. I think this movie is so underrated that it isn't funny. This movie is one of the reasons why I knew I would never fit in with mainstream society, because I used to run around telling people about this movie and they would all look at me like I was crazy. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. This is a masterpiece. This is and so I'm going to have fun rewatching it with the intention of actually trying to discuss it on an intelligent level, but prepare for gushing next week.
Yeah, I actually got to see this at a drive-in a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah?
It was pretty glorious.
I went to a screening once with Lance Henriksen at it, and it was that's fucking awesome.
All right, so yeah, this will be good. I'm excited to see this. Ever since Doug mentioned it for the first time or the 20th time or somewhere in there,
I bring it up a lot.
When I realized, okay, Doug really likes this movie, I feel like I definitely need to see it, at least to support my podcast co-host. But
wait, we're supposed to be supportive of one another?
I'm gonna give it a shot. All right. We'll see how it goes. I'll let you know.
I was gonna say, we've all been doing it wrong.